9.
Now we're recording.
Clarifying question. We began by discussing the well log information. That was 03DAB1, it was figure 8 in your exhibit 45.
Correct.
And then I believe we went to figure 14 where you did your regression analysis.
Of that well?
Of that well.
Okay.
And then you looked at the last, it showed a decline from 1990, maybe even a little steeper, sometime around 1993 to about 96, and then a little less of a decline from 97 till maybe 2000, or 2001 perhaps, and then somewhat of a rise from 2001 till about 2008, correct?
Correct.
So if you were to take that same regression line and break it up on your data points, if you would go to figure 21 in the same exhibit 45, for well 35ACA1.
Yes.
If you were to look at the last 2 to 3 years there, would you not also find a steep regression line of decline?
Visually looking at it, it looks to me if you drew a line from 2006 to late 2008, it looks like you would draw a regression line declining downwards.
So I guess my point is it not true that you could, and I believe you stated earlier that monitoring is important over a long time.
That's correct.
And yet what I've seen you do, at least on one representation of the first well identified in figure 8, was not looking at a regression line over the full data set. It was just over those, you're emphasizing the last 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
And did I not hear you say it's important to look at what's happening over a longer term?
I did say that I think the long-term data is the better data. I think this is definitely qualifies as long-term data. And let me address your point that, okay, I believe you're going to. If you look at well 35ACA1, that's the one that you just referred,
correct,
to,
yes.
Figure 21 in exhibit 45. I think what I said was the very first thing we would do is visually look at the data. The second thing we would do was do a regression line through all of the data, and then if there's a reason for us to look at a smaller segment of it, we would draw regression lines in a thorough analysis on the basis of all of those criteria. In this well, what I would point out to you, and I think I started to originally and perhaps did before, is that we chose two segments of this line. There's the period from from 1991 to approximately 1998 that shows a more steep recovery trend. And then there's another period that we broke out from 1997 to 2008 that shows a slight, if almost stable, trend. And the reason that we broke those out, but I did also say that if you drew a regression line through all these points, it would be a rising line through that's between the slopes of these two lines. The reason we broke those out is if you look below on the graph, we were trying to determine if there might, in all of these graphs, we provided a representation of the yearly annual precipitation that fell in this area, just as a guide, if for no other reason. And it appeared that there was, and I'm not saying there is, because remember, this was the geothermal above ground head Yaker well. But there was a break in the precipitation data there. It was rising. The precipitation was increasing at the point where this point of this part of the water level in the well was on an increasing trend. And since the precipitation has gradually been decreasing, you could say that it is similar, or there's a similarity there to the break in slope on this other part of the graph.
Does, in your opinion, does annual precipitation play a role in aquifers that are 100 feet, 200 feet, 1,000 feet down? Can they, are they, can you discern that same year or a year later?
I think it's more visible in the shallow wells selected for the IDWR memo. It's a very clear relationship in those wells. But I also say that if we have also drawn a regression line through all of the precipitation data, and if you do that, that's on a general decline. Okay. Did I answer your question, sir?
Yes.
Okay. So now, the well that you wanted us to look at, your original question,
yes,
I believe, is 36ABB1. Was that it?
It's
32DBD1. Got
correct.
It. Okay, now if you refer to Table 1 of Exhibit 45, and thank you, Mr. Faraday. I think this was the well that you tried to direct my attention to earlier when I was confused. On Table 1, Exhibit 45, 32DBD1, under the local name of Killerman, completed to a depth of 120 to 125. Data points used in the analysis, 13. We believe it's completed in the alluvial aquifer overlying the PGSA. Our comment is that it's too shallow to be in the PGSA. It was designated as being in the PGSA by the IDWR staff. And if you'll just bear with me one second, DBD1. It doesn't appear that we have an analysis of that one. And since the data is not available for that well on the graph, I can't really address it other than to say I don't believe it's in the PGSA. Just one second, though. Table 2.
Same DB. Report, just the page.
Yeah,
behind.
Next page, DBD1. Yes, Killerman. Okay, we felt that the seal in that well was poor. It was listed on the driller's log as 18 feet of drill cuttings, 18 feet of alluvial drill cuttings, or what is often referred to as puddling clay. It was a cable tool drill and drive well, 17 years old, with constructed a quarter inch thin wall steel casing, and we judged it non-suitable as a good monitoring well. We're talking about the Killerman.
On Table 2?
On Table 2 is the assessment of well suitability for monitoring trend in the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer.
What about its monitoring trend of the shallower aquifers?
Well, I don't, if I was you and I wanted to monitor the trends in the overlying aquifer, I would want to have a sealed well, because something that has a puddling clay surface sealed 18 feet, if there's any surface water available, it's probably going to impact your water levels to a positive extent, or it would be very closely associated with precipitation.
And are you seeing that expressed in the graph of the IDWR staff memo, that if it was open to the surface and surface water infiltration, do you see anything that shows that that's been an increase there?
Well, as we showed in our graphs, that there's an overall decrease in precipitation. And I can't speak to that because I didn't get a chance to see the data from the support where these data points were picked. As we reviewed the data points that were picked, if I could refer you to another document. In fact, I can refer you to a figure in this same document. And that would be figure 5.
When you say the same document?
Exhibit 45, excuse me, figure 5. It's an 11 by 17 hydrograph, and the orange colored line is the water level fluctuation in the M3 Eagle test well number 1.
And could you refresh my memory, whereabouts is that?
That's right down in the panhandle near Highway 16.
Okay.
And this shows, pardon me, the annual fluctuation that we keep referring to, where the water level is high in January and February at its highest in that interval, and it's in its lowest somewhere around August, September, October. Okay? Those are the low points of this graph, the low and high points. And in our conviction on monitoring, we believe that the best time to monitor water levels is all the time. But if you can only monitor levels in a period, then you concentrate on the periods of the graph that are at the high and that are at the low, because as you can see from visualization of this fluctuating water level, that say in the interval from mid-March to July, the water levels are changing quite abruptly. In fact, almost all the water level change in the graph occurs within that short time period in the drawdown in response to a collective pumping cone of depression in the aquifer, the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer. Okay. Similarly, after you get past the bottom of the graph, the most stable water levels at the bottom between, in the 2000 year here, I would say between the middle of July and the middle of August, you have a similar high changing period from the middle of August up until the end of November, where you've almost got the entirety of the 15-foot change in that short time interval. Okay, so if you're only going to be able to measure in a periodicity, in a few data points during the course of a year, we would concentrate on those points, especially the recovery level. And we, from our analysis of Appendix A of the staff memo, Exhibit 50, we think that a lot of those measurements taken for those analysis, those culled 13 points or 12 points taken out of a much larger database, we think that they were mostly taken during that period when there was high fluctuations in the water level.
And then are you aware that in the, I think it's the staff memorandum, IDWR staff memorandum, number exhibit 50, appendix A, where on page 1, where it identifies IDWR review, if you can get to that.
I'm at exhibit 50, page 1.
On appendix A.
Oh.
You go back to the memo from Mike McVeigh.
Yes.
And on number 2 underneath the IDWR, the way I read this, and I can't speak because I did not work on the data, it appeared that the data was filtered for, at least attempted to be filtered for yearly spring measurements in each well, and they were defined as between March to May. So would not that
help
take away some of the variation in the data you could get over the year?
Well, I think you're just remaking my point, that that period of selection is within the highly variable part of the drawdown curve of the known annual fluctuation cycle in this part of the world within the PGSA. If you look at the interval from mid-March down through May, that we almost have half or close to half of the annual fluctuation in the water level occurs during that period. So not only are we using just a very few data points, we're taking them from a period of high changeability.
Okay.
And I would submit that a better way to determine what's going on in the aquifer is to select water levels from the periods that are known to be relatively stable. As you can see, in that same year, January 2007, the water levels have reached what you might say is a pretty stable recovery level all the way from December 2006 to mid-March 2007. That's a period of 1, 2, 3, 3.5 months.
And then going back to come to closure on this point, going back to the staff memorandum, Appendix A, the last graph of Mike McVay's well 32 DBD1, I don't believe I heard, and maybe there was a reason for that steep decline. It appears based on the depth may not be in the Pierce Gulch. That I don't know. Can you describe that declining trend?
I said that I can't describe that because I don't know the data set, and I don't. We judged that the well's not in the Pierce Gulch. We judged that the well was not suitable for monitoring. It was an unsealed well, so we don't think it's a suitable well for depicting what's going on in the Pierce Gulch sand. Okay.
And over in Lexington Hills, are you familiar with the well there? It sounded like you were.
I'm very familiar with it, yes.
And what is the depth of the well or the Pierce Gulch sand aquifer there, approximately?
9-day aquifer test exhibit again.
44.
44? 40. 44. Exhibit 44. Oh, no, sorry, 16.
12.
Reanalysis of 16.
12.
12.
Exhibit 12.
Towards the back of the exhibit 12, six reanalysis of 16 aquifer tests, we included an appendix, and I'll get that appendix number for you, of the wells that we analyzed as part of that. And I believe the Lexington Hills well, which was the pumping well for the 30-day Lexington Hills test, we have the data, the geophysical data for the Lexington Hills number one well, formerly known as the Floating Feather well or the Homeco well.
And that is Lexington Hills. Is that located, Floating Feather, in about, I think I know where it is. But
it's over fairly close to Highway 55, actually.
Okay.
It's the eastern, one of the easternmost wells.
Okay.
Just bear with me one second here. Yes.
And you have a range of the periscope.
Yeah.
Sand is there.
Just 1 second. Let me direct you to the. Okay, so this is Exhibit 12, Appendix A. No, that's table. Yeah, Appendix A, table of well and aquifer support information. Toward the back of the report, about a quarter way from the end, because there's a lot of support information. Follows a blue page, Appendix A well information. And if you go 8 solid pages, that'd be 16 double-sided backwards, you'll come to a cross-sectional schematic a drawing of the Lexington Hills number one well by CH2M Hill, by Chuck Feast of CH2M Hill, who carried out that test.
It's a schematic, right?
It's a cross-sectional diagram of the well construction.
Okay, I believe we're there now.
And looking at the well construction diagram, you'll see that there's a screen interval from 215 to 265.
Yes.
And I believe that that screen interval is in the updip portion of the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer, and that you'll see there's another screened interval from 375 to 385.
Correct.
And I believe that screen is completed into the Turtling Springs Formation, which is the thin aquifer underlying the Pierce Gulch Sand. Now, if you go to the next page, where it says Homeco Eagle, March 5th, 1991, BSU Geophysics.
Right.
This is the normal resistivity logs run in that well by the geophysical unit that I operated and built at BSU back in those years. And this first page starts out at ground level and goes approximately down to 175 feet. And then you turn to the next page, and you'll see that the geophysical logs end just slightly below 400 feet.
Yes.
And these logs are perhaps not as clear at this scale, because this was a strip chart back then and not a digital log. But if you look at the second page, where the geophysical traces go from 200 feet down to about 275 feet, which, recall, the screen on the other page was 265 base, right?
Okay.
I believe that that is the signal of the prograding delta that we've spoken about, the fining downwards. That's the base of the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer. Then there's a period of mudstone in there, and the large spike centering on about 380 feet in the bottom of the well is the Turtling Springs. So the answer to your question is probably somewhere right around 275 is the base of it.
On the, again, referring to Appendix A of the IDWR staff memorandum, which is Exhibit 50, it was not my understanding that the, in reading this, that this was an attempt to look at only the PGSA, but of aquifers or wells in the Eagle vicinity. Was your understanding that this was trying to describe the aquifer over the aquifer, the PGSA aquifer over time, specifically only that?
Well, the wells that were identified, not all of them were in the PGSA, but our interest in this case is the PGSA, right, and that's what I'm responding to.
Do you believe that it was IDWR's intent to look at just the PGSA based on this Appendix A by Mike McVeigh? Do you see anywhere in the introduction or that describes that that was the intent?
Well, I think back to the overarching memo, referred to as the staff memo, and the conclusions of that memo that determined, based on those hydrographs and those analyses, that the recharge in the PGSA is lagging behind the discharge. And those were based on those graphs, and I don't think that's appropriate to make that decision.
Okay.
I don't agree.
Okay. Do you believe that the IDWR had an interest in terms of, especially from the protestants' viewpoints, of knowing what was going on in the shallower aquifers in light of what I believe you yourself have said and Dr. Spence Woods, that there is some communication between the two?
Well, I think, as I previously stated, that this application and this hearing and this administrative proceeding is based upon M3's desire to exploit the Pierce Gulch Sand Aquifer for potable water supply for their, and I then followed that by saying that if water levels in the PGSA are not declining, which I see no evidence of them declining, then whatever is going on in the shallow aquifer is not a function of what's going on in the PGSA. If the PGSA is increasing, then pumping in the PGSA, if there are declines in the shallow aquifer, are not caused by pumping in the PGSA.
Okay.
They may be caused by other reasons. They may be caused by a decline in precipitation. They may be declined for any variety of reasons that I don't know about, if indeed they are in decline. But I submit that through our analysis that the selected wells are probably not suitable. They're not suitable for the PGSA, but they're probably not many of them suitable for monitoring any zone of the aquifer. That would be my position. And I think rather we should depend on good quality monitoring wells of known construction with seals to base our decisions on.
Mr. Hearing Officer, I've still got lots of questions, and we can continue if you'd like, or I don't know if this is we'll be shifting a little bit to some other types of questions from Mr. Squires.
I expect to finish with Mr. Squires, and if you're going somewhere else, this may be a logical place to break. We're just shy of 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Fine with everybody?
Okay.
Let's go off the record. We'll recess until... When are we scheduled back? 4th?